Our next speaker is the Cook County Board President, and she is a frequent attendee at City Club of Chicago events, for which we are enormously grateful. She also encourages her leadership team to speak at the City Club, which we are also enormously grateful for. But before I bring her up here, I want to tell you how smart our speaker is today. He not only has his wife here, Helen. Say hi to everyone, Helen. Helen Summers, say hi. But also his mother, Sherry Wilson. So why don't you both stand up and let's give him a City Club of Chicago welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Preckwinkle. Madam President.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm grateful to be here, and as Jay says, I try to come quite often. I believe in these kind of public forums as an opportunity to share what's going on in government at all levels. So I'm very grateful for the chance to be here today and the chance to come regularly to speak on my own behalf as president of the county. So it's my pleasure to introduce Kurt Summers. Kurt, as many of you know, was my first chief of staff. And it's hard to imagine how we would have managed in those first couple of years without him. He's smart and talented, and he has the ability to keep lots of balls in the air. I'm very grateful to him and indebted to him for his good work on behalf of the people of Cook County for those couple of years before he went on to bigger and better things, making lots of money, and then coming back to the public sector. And speaking of money, he's the steward of the city's $7 billion investment portfolio. He serves as a trustee or fiduciary on five of the city's public employee pension boards, with nearly $25 billion under management. He also serves as chairman of the Infrastructure Trust, which invests in long-term growth, job creation, and economic development in the city of Chicago. He's a lifelong Chicago resident, actually part of a distinguished political family in Chicago, and a graduate of a public high school, Whitney Young, one of my favorites. He earned his undergraduate degree from Washington University in St. Louis, and he has an MBA, as his wife does, from the Harvard Business School. Please welcome Kurt Summers.
All right, good afternoon. You guys are well trained by Madam President there. First of all, thank you, Jay, and thank you to the City Club for having me here. This is my third time here. Jay will remember my first time here was about 2 hours after I was sworn in a couple of years ago, and it's been a wild ride since then. In addition to my lovely wife and mother were introduced, I also have another family member here, my brother, Brandon Allen, if you could stand. He's 6'8", so he wasn't standing all the way up there. But today this was fun to prepare for, and you'll see why in a minute. I want to thank Jay and the board of the City Club, but I also want to thank the late great Paul Green, and thought about him as I was preparing this, so I'm taking a different approach today. And this is not the typical City Club speech. I was thinking about this, and I said, you know, the average politician gets here and they tell you all the great things that they've done, all the problems that exist, and the 10-point plan that they have to fix them, whether that materializes or not. That's their plan, and they're going to, you know, convince you that that's the answer. Well, today, in typical Paul the Professor fashion, I wanted to have a different conversation. I wanted to have a conversation about rekindling the spirit of Chicago and tapping into what I think is the future and the answer of this city, which is in this room. There's Paul, who, you know, we all, that's a great picture, right? Yeah. See, I thought about him quite a bit in preparing my remarks because he was not only a teacher, but he was the quintessential historian of Chicago. And not just the politics, but the people. He really got us, and he got what makes us tick. And I thought about, as I thought about today's conversation, I tried to define exactly what that is. What is it that makes us tick? See, this is important, and I'm going to ask for your help, because my wife and I have a big task in front of us. We're going to leave here this afternoon, and we're traveling to Boston, because tomorrow we're speaking to 900 first-year Harvard MBAs about leadership. And believe it or not, they're doing a case about us. And she deserves all the applause for that. She was my classmate. She was the person who convinced me to move back to Chicago when we graduated. But here's what's tough about this. We have the tough task of explaining leadership in the context of Chicago and its great history, its city of big shoulders. And it's especially tough for me because they're sort of using me as the case study and the guinea pig. And if those of you who went to business school or went through any sort of case method know that their job is to beat me up, right, and talk about all the bad things that I've done, all the wrong decisions that I've made. So I'm hoping that you guys will help me in articulating what this approach is and what's so Chicago about it. You know, my view about Chicago is that we have a real sense of urgency. We have a work ethic. We have a sense of purpose that's greater than oneself. It's really hard to explain, especially to those who aren't from here, but most of us in this room know what it means. And for the last 180 years, it's worked out pretty well for us. By the way, I want to just point out a note about this picture. Someone made this point to me the other day. How many folks in this room, when you're flying back into Chicago, get a sense of calm and relief when you see that on the airline, right? Someone mentioned that to me the other day. I said, you know what, you're right. I do feel better. I do feel excited to be home when I see that that beautiful skyline. That's what we think of when we think of Chicago. This is what the world sees. This was the front page of the Wall Street Journal the first day of November, 7 days before the election. And it was about not just the election, but about Chicago and the fact that our murder rate was looking to exceed any rate in the last 20 years. Thus far this year, we're at nearly 750 murders, almost 4,200 shootings. And it got me thinking that the narrative about Chicago, and in fact, at some level, what we're beginning to think about ourselves is wrong. This is not the Chicago that I know, and it's certainly not what makes Chicago great. This is not what defines us. And so what I wanted to do was have a conversation about our history and what makes this place great and our future, and ask a question about what our connection is to where we've been and whether we've lost some of that and how much we need that, how much we need that spirit. We need to rekindle it going forward. See, for me, the connection to the sense of purpose, to being part of making Chicago the greatest city in the world, and doing so with urgency, taking no day for granted, this feeling for me came at an early age. As I thought back about this, my earliest memory of this feeling about my life and its purpose in Chicago was in 1987. Most of you might think it was because of the re-election of Harold Washington, one of the greatest men I've ever met, or maybe the end of the infamous council wars that allowed us to have a period of peace and prosperity in governing. My earliest memory actually comes from the 1987 Chicago Cubs. Not these Cubs, because they finished in last place. Not the professional athletes. But these Cubs, the Little League clubs, which I played on. This is not my actual team. It was the best facsimile I could find. See, I was in the Jackie Robinson West, now made famous for being Little League world champions. And at the end of the banner season for the Little League clubs, it was time for the All-Star game. And what I didn't know at the time was that this would be my last organized baseball game. I still remember it like it was yesterday. I was the starting third baseman for the team. I was that good at 8 years old. It was a hot, bright, sunny day, and we were up by what seemed to be dozens of runs. So I begged my coach to finally let me play outfield like my idol, Andre Dawson. He did finally succumb to this request. And of course, the first play, the first pitch, was a high pop fly straight to me. I think you know that this story doesn't end with me making the play and being the hero. It ends with a broken nose, a broken eye socket, a blood clot, and the emergency room. I couldn't see out of either eye for a week. I couldn't see out of my right eye for almost a month. I had a blood clot that was risking moving to my brain. I don't remember that play, but here's what I do remember. I remember the nurses at Little Company of Mary telling me it was going to be okay, that God wasn't done with me yet. I remember the doctors telling me that if the ambulance hadn't got there when it did, I may have permanently lost my vision. I remember my teammates and their parents bringing me the ball and wishing me a speedy recovery. I remember my grandfather, who had just helped Harold Washington win re-election, coming to visit me and telling me not to give up, and that he and the mayor had been working so hard just to leave a future for me and my sister. I remember my mother, after I got out of the hospital, forcing me to get protective gear just to go to physical education. These things make you who you are, you know. I learned from this the sense of community that we have here. I learned that we're all connected, that tomorrow is not promised, that our lives must have a purpose, that service is the rent that we pay for living on this earth, and that Chicago especially is made great by its people and how much we care. It's always been there, this boldness, this sense of altruism and civic pride, this sense of greatness. Just look back at the famous Plan of Chicago, written by Burnham and Bennett, commissioned by the Commercial Club of Chicago. We need only look here just over a century ago to be reminded about what makes us great, what makes us tick, and what's in our spirit. I added this, I'm going to read it, but I want everyone to just read silently along with me here. The soul of Chicago, vital and dominant, it finds the men and women. It makes the occasion. It attracts the sincere and unselfish. It vitalizes the organization. It impels it to reach heights not believed possible of attainment. This spirit still exists. It is present today among us. It is even now impelling us to larger and better achievements for the public good. This spirit, the spirit of Chicago, is our greatest asset. It is not merely civic pride. It is rather the constant, steady determination to bring about the very best conditions of life for all the people, with full knowledge that what we as a people decide to do in the public interest, we can and surely will bring to pass. That's Chicago. That's been Chicago since our history, since our rebuilding. And that spirit is still alive today. It's alive in the people of Chicago, in everyday people leading change in their communities, giving support to their families, teaching young people the value of sport, hard work, teamwork, and civic pride. We have hundreds, if not thousands, of people throughout this patchwork quilt of 77 neighborhoods in our city leading every day. They are making no little plans. They are sincere and unselfish. They are reaching what people thought were impossible heights. This is what defines our city. It's the people, not the politicians. It's the givers, not the takers. It's the vision, not the violence. It's actions, not stalemates. It's not names like Rauner, Emanuel, Madigan, Summers, Cullerton, or even Preckwinkle. Sorry, Tony. It's Jimmy Lee, it's Alicia Gonzalez, It's Emil Cambry. It's Jimmy Dower. It's Calvin Holmes. It's Juan Salgado. It's Halima Nash. It's Kara Bachman. It's Rhymefest. It's Jamal Cole. It's Joshua Hale. It's Todd Connor. It's Dominique Jordan Turner. It's Juan Salgado. Liam Kribel. I'm looking at all of them. That's why I can say this without my notes. See, this is the next generation. And I'm sorry, Mike Stratmanis. Thank you for staying, sir. And there's a host of others, Suzette McKinney, Vaughn Bryant, who are here in support of this. This is the next generation of leaders who will shape and define our century, our next century of progress. See, I ask these people here today because they are leaders that we all need to know. They are the ones in often thankless jobs, not you, Derek Douglas. Yours is pretty thankful. The rest of them, though, are in thankless jobs that are often overlooked and almost always undervalued. There's a saying, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. I'm proud to call each and every one of these people my friends. They inspire me. And if you want to see a new plan for Chicago, you're looking at it on this side of the room. I ask them today to come here to serve as a reminder to each of us what the spirit of Chicago is. What's special about this place, this city in a garden that makes no small plans and maintains a fire inside us larger than the one we rose from. For my friend Josh Hale, I want to paraphrase our great poet Carl Sandburg, who dubbed us more than 100 years ago the city of big shoulders, who said that this is Chicago's soul. It's our spirit. Come and show me another city with lifted head singing, so proud to be alive and coarse and strong and courageous. Fierce as a dog with tongue lapping for action. Cunning as a savage pitted against the wilderness. Bareheaded, shoveling, wrecking, planning, building, breaking, rebuilding. Proud to be the butcher, the toolmaker, the stacker of wheat, the player with railroads, and the freight hauler to the nation. This is Chicago's soul. This is Chicago's spirit. They are Chicago's future and their example, and they're people that you all should know. Today, my desire for this room and for this city is that we rekindle this spirit, that we remember our greatness, that we live up to the promise of this great city. So for the people of Chicago that aren't here, that are affected by those in this room, for those that are fighting and working for a different narrative, for those whose promise is yet to be fulfilled but will be because of the greatness in this room, I ask that we all stand and applaud these great Chicagoans who are doing this work every day and doing it selflessly and for no other reason than to help us achieve our greatness. Thank you. Now, that's the secret on ending with a standing applause. And in all honesty, they didn't know what they were signing up for when they were asked to come here today. I just asked them to be a part of this. I said I had some remarks that I thought would resonate with them. They didn't know that they would have their pictures up there. They didn't know they'd get called out by name. And they may not have known the inspiration that they are to me. But I hope that in the days, months, and years to come, they're going to be an inspiration to all of you. Thank you.
That was probably not my most ladylike entrance on the stage, but oh well. You got water? You good?
I'm good.
Questions? Really? You guys going to do this to me?
I recognize this was not the typical presentation
Graham
from a treasurer.
Been
so all the bankers in the room, feel free to ask a financial question.
Oh, we will. We will. We will. So while we're waiting on questions to come up, And far be it from me to ever interrupt the president. Yes, President Preckwinkle.
All right, so tell us about the fiscal
Yep. The question was, tell us about the fiscal challenges that the city faces and how the treasurer can impact it. Well, I was trying not to brag, so I'll, you know, I was having this conversation earlier today with someone. We are in a better position today than we were 2 years ago, 5 years ago, and even 10 years ago. Our fiscal house is not yet in order, but we are in the right direction. There have been tough decisions that have been made by you all and by the city council and the mayor to make sure that we have the resources to do our jobs and to deliver services. But we're by no means out of the woods. My friend Victor Roa is in the room, who's the president of the Laborers Pension Fund. And Victor will be the first one to tell you that our path forward has funding solutions for that fund for the next several years, but we're going to reach a point a few years later down the road where we don't have the resources still to meet the need. And we haven't identified that revenue source. That's the biggest challenge that we still have. As much as we've done to fix the direction that we're in, there will be a time, 5, 6, 7 years from now, where the bell will toll again. Here's what we're doing in our office about that. This year, we were budgeted to generate about $58 million, which was up about $10 million from last year. This is investment revenue on your portfolio. This is in that sleepy little office on the first floor of City Hall. We're going to exceed that by more than double. We're going to generate about $120 million for the people of Chicago this year by being better, smarter, faster, more sophisticated, better investors. That money is going to lead to better programming, safer streets, better parks, schools for the people in this room. And it's going to mean less of a need to come to you when the bell tolls five years from now. The other thing that we did this year that I'm quite proud of is we launched a new fund. It was passed as the Catalyst Fund with the help of Alderman Moore and others on the council a few weeks ago. We colloquially call it Fund 77, representing the 77 neighborhoods of the city. And the purpose of that was we've had mandates with the city treasury and the pension funds to invest everywhere in the world. We have requirements to invest in South America, in the Middle East, in Western Africa, in East Asia, Southeast Asia, Western Europe. We have requirements to invest our capital everywhere but the largest market, the third largest market in the largest economy in the world, which happens to be our backyard. And we've been missing out on that opportunity. We've been missing out on those returns. We've been missing out on that diversification. We've also been missing out on an ability to leverage our assets to contribute to our future, to help shoulder the burden that the people on this side of the room are facing every day. The city of Chicago has now committed the first $100 million in a seed fund to invest in our own backyard, to invest in our neighborhoods outside of the Central Business District, and to get a real return on that money will help ultimately solve and benefit our fiscal situation. Because as we all know, you know, this is a function of the number of people contributing and the amount that they're contributing and what's the cost of doing business. We haven't done enough to increase the number of people and the amount of people. We haven't done enough to increase the parity, the equality, the equity, and address the disparity of those numbers. And until we do that, we can't be a great city that these words and of our forefathers promised us to be. So that's what we hope to get done with Fund 77.
So we have some good questions here now. I know how old the city treasurer is. And I also know that we have a number of other young electeds and people who are in public office. There's a whole table full of them back there. We've got Dr. Suzette McKinney here. I have to say that Dr. Green would be so proud, and you do a better history job than I do. He might be the next historian. I don't know. But I have to say that that some of the old guard, if you will, has set the table well. I think we're not in bad shape when we talk about how we're going to move this city forward and move it forward, as Jay often tells me, looking the way that we should look, looking the way Chicago really looks. That table's pretty diverse over there if you haven't spoken to any of them. So, Steve Abbey, I think he just answered your question. Where are you, Steve? He answered your question, right? Okay. There was a question up here already. I didn't really. James Chuck, are you here? So you know I made this rule up that if you're not here, I don't ask your question, right? But I'm going to ask it because it's a pretty good one. It says, Azure Aviation Group. Okay.
Yeah, just don't ask the first part of that.
Will you include investments in job creations in the neighborhoods to combat crime? And can you just talk about your investing?
Yeah. The first part of the question started the question, as Chicago's next mayor. So that's why I asked for it to be deleted. But now I can share it with you in jest. So the question itself, I think, is a great one, which is investment in job creation for the neighborhoods. The entire purpose and the premise, when I was here December 1st, 2014, we had a plan on every one of your chairs and outside. And the title of that plan was Investing in Our Chicago. Our Chicago. Not just downtown Chicago. Not just where the 33 cranes are in the air today. We need that. But we need investment everywhere. We need it in the neighborhoods that are looking into the downtown, hoping for opportunity in their home. And the purpose of this fund is to do exactly that. And the great thing is we're not alone. Here in Chicago, we have a groundswell of impact investment that's happening. We have the launch of Benefit Chicago, Invest Chicago, Jimmy's here, a neighborhood opportunity fund. We just got over $400 million, an unprecedented amount of money in new markets tax credit, thanks to Mayor Emanuel's advocacy with the federal government. We have a collection of assets and a focus and a team and great leaders who, I think, for the first time in recent history, not only have the passion to do this, but finally have the resources aligned to do it and the focus and understanding that the success of our city depends on eliminating and the difference between our neighborhoods. The success of our city comes when people feel just as comfortable in certain parts of the city on the south and west sides as they do in the West Loop, because they didn't in the West Loop 20 years ago, and they didn't in the South Loop 20 years ago. It's not that we haven't shown that we can do this. We've shown it. We've done it. And now it's time to focus on the areas that we haven't focused on, and that's the vision here, and it will lead to job creation, and it will lead to better, more stable communities and families, which is the only way that we get to a better Chicago.
Christy Hefner is, I just saw her. She's over somewhere. There she is. Hi, Christy. Can you talk about your impact on social impacting bonds, investment decisions?
Not social impact bonds, social impact investing, and what role does that have in my investment decisions? So I have a fiduciary obligation to protect all of your assets and to achieve the best possible return with the least amount of risk, especially on treasury assets. There are times, though, when there are investments that exist that, because of their social actions, can actually be harmful financial investments. I'll use Wells Fargo as an example. When Wells Fargo was exposed for the challenges and the malpractice that they committed earlier this year, we immediately liquidated our investments from Wells Fargo. And it made a difference the way that we did it. We did it without losing a dime, not selling it below par, not selling it in a sideways market. But the fact that we communicated that we were doing it because the social practices led to a bad investment. The poor governance, the ethics and morals of that company made them no longer a good investment for us. I think we have the same opportunity on the positive side. Last year we joined the United Auto Workers, SEIU, and a host of other institutional investors to demand proxy access at McDonald's for two things. One, for wage fairness, not just for entry-level employees, but up and down the chain, wage fairness across the board, wage fairness with respect to gender, but also to have diversity in their boardroom and in their C-suite and in the pipeline of people that could lead that entity. And if the institutional investors don't take the stand and believe that a more diverse entity, an entity that pays fair wages for working people, is a better, more sustainable one in the long run, if we don't stand up and do that, no one will. So I think there is a great place for social responsible investing in the framework of the way that we invest, because it protects you. It protects your investment.
So, Calvin Holmes, are you here? Hi, Calvin. Calvin says, is from the Chicago Community Loan Fund. Given how long-running and complex... I've been trying to read this for the last few minutes.
I have really bad handwriting. Can I read it? I'm good at this.
She's better than me like that?
No, I just have bad handwriting, so we're simpatico. Given how long-running and complex the issues are that drive over our youth to violence, please say more on how your office will reconnect them with more productive values.
That's pretty good, Kurt.
This is bad handwriting.
That's pretty good, Kurt.
Years of practice. My mom will tell you I used to bring home U's, which stand for unsatisfactory, in handwriting when I was in kindergarten. So, you know, the short of it is the conversation that I had with so many of the people that are at those tables and others here were about leveraging this platform of this office and my background and my upbringing and the way that I view the world to be for the greatest good for the greatest number of people, but especially for those that I think view their lot in this life as a struggle. And we often have this conversation around why do young people commit violence. At an early age, my dad taught me the concept of opportunity cost. I was in high school. I'll never forget. My dad didn't finish college, but he had a college microeconomics book for some reason. And he said, I want to teach you this concept of opportunity cost. And he drilled it home. And we all know what that means. But if you put yourselves in the shoes of a young person in this city, in certain neighborhoods, in certain communities, in certain families, there isn't a true opportunity cost. Because as they look at the likely trajectory of their lives, they will end up dead or in jail. If they do something wrong, they will end up dead or in jail. If they decide they no longer want to be a productive citizen, they have just as likely in many of their minds, now I believe they're wrong about this, and I think everyone here probably does as well, they don't have a view of true opportunity costs because it likely leads to the same outcome. The role that we have to play and what we're doing in our office is serving as a conduit, as a platform, as a resource provider, as a light shiner, and as a leader for young people especially to connect to other opportunities and to other people. Most young people in this city don't know, Will Evans, that you know you could be a black man and the head of a large utility. Most people, Christy Hefner, don't know that you can be a young woman and be the CEO of a major company. Most people, Jackie Robinson Ivy, don't know that you can grow up on the west side of Chicago, or in your case, Springfield, but you live on the west side, and be a senior banking professional at one of Chicago's oldest banks. They don't know that, and it's up to us and it's up to these people to serve as that example. The most powerful thing we can do is to provide that example. The most powerful thing we can do is to make it real and follow up and follow through. And I think that's what we're trying to do.
So Kurt is one of the ones that I call one of my ones to watch. And based on who he's brought, by the way, Jay, he's not having to moderate anymore. He's just doing it himself. Huh? Why are you in here? But based on what you just see, that is what Chicago looks like. And if we've got leaders doing that, I'm not worried about this city at all. And thanks, Dr. Green, because I know he's looking down really proud today. So let's...